So we'll read a verse from Canto 3, Chapter 27, called Understanding Material Nature, and Text 5. So the Sanskrit. Ata eva. Shanais chitam prasaktam asatam pati bhakti yogena tivrena viraktyacha nayat vasyam. Translation: it is the duty of every conditioned soul, that's us, to engage his polluted consciousness, that matches, which is now attached to material enjoyment. How do they know? In very serious devotional service, with detachment. Thus his mind and consciousness will be under full control. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The process of liberation is very nicely explained in this verse. The cause of one's becoming conditioned by material nature is thinking himself the enjoyer, the proprietor, or the friend of all living entities. This false thinking is a result of contemplation on sense enjoyment, when one thinks that he is the best friend to his countrymen, to society, or to humanity, and he engages in various nationalistic, philanthropic, and altruistic activities. All that is just so much concentration on sense gratification. The so-called national leader or humanist does not serve everyone. He serves his senses only. That is a fact. But the conditioned soul cannot understand this because he is bewildered by the spell of material nature. It is therefore recommended in this verse that one engage very seriously in the devotional service of the Lord. This means that one should not think that he is the proprietor, benefactor, friend, or enjoyer. He should always be cognizant that the real enjoyer is Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is the basic principle of Bhakti Yoga. One must be firmly convinced of these three principles. He speaks them again. One should always think that Krishna is the proprietor, Krishna is the enjoyer, and Krishna is the friend. No, not only should one understand these principles himself, but he should try to convince others and propagate Krishna consciousness. That's the first paragraph. Two more. As soon as one engages in such serious devotional service of the Lord, naturally the propensity to falsely claim lordship over material nature disappears. That detachment is called vairagya. Instead of being absorbed in so-called material lordship, one engages in Krishna consciousness. Semicolon. That is control of consciousness. The yoga process necessitates controlling the senses. Yoga indriya samyamaha. Since the senses are always active, their activity should be engaged in devotional service. One cannot stop their activities. If one wants to artificially stop the activities of the senses, his attempt will be a failure. Even the great yogi Vishwamitra, who was trying to control his senses by yogic process, fell victim to the beauty of Menaka. There are many such instances. Unless one's mind and consciousness are fully engaged in devotional service, there is always the opportunity for the mind to become occupied with desires for sense gratification. Final paragraph. One particular point mentioned in this verse is very significant. It is said here, Prasaktam Asatam Patihi. The mind is always attracted by the asat, or the temporary, material existence. Because we have associated with material nature, since time immemorial, we have become accustomed to our attachment to this material nature. The mind has to be fixed on the eternal lotus feet of the Supreme Lord, Savayamana Krishna Padaravindayo. One has to fix the mind on the lotus feet of Krishna, then everything will be very nice. Thus, the seriousness of bhakti yoga is stressed in this verse. The previous chapter, Fundamental Principles of Material Nature, just quickly, it's really complicated. It's hard to read. And besides, leaving you scratching your head, what's all this here? But yet the next question is, why is it even in the Bhagavatam? Well, it has to do with the message that's being presented here for Bhakti Yoga. So, Sankhya is analyzing on one hand, it's all the elements of matter and how this fits with that, and how they come out and how they come back in again, and the push and pull of material nature in its makeup. And then distinct from that is the soul. And as long as that distinction of the self from matter isn't clear, the mind, through false ego, the mind becomes implicated in matter and identifies with matter and designations of matter and the whole material program. So the intent behind Sankhya is detachment from that material identification, establishing spiritual identification. That it's detailed really nicely in the beginning of this chapter. It leads to devotional service, but it's devotional service where there isn't the kind of devotional service where one says devotional service, but you still identify with the body and the whole, enjoyment through the body, although I have this notion that I'm spirit soul. It's, and there's more detail, but it's the conceptions of life being carried in the mind are spiritualized so that the mind can then contemplate transcendence. And in that contemplation of transcendence, engage in devotional service to the Supreme Lord. That's where the whole program. And gives a real nice metaphor. First verse. Just like the sun shining on a body of water, and while the water is moving, the reflection of the sun on the water is moving, but the sun is not moving. So similarly, one who has established themselves properly in Sankhya, they can see the matter and the movements of matter and the reflection of of consciousness in matter, but they don't identify it. They identify with the unchanging material nature, the soul, the unchanging nature of the soul. And so not only then the movements, but then this concept of proprietorship comes. It's detachment from the false sense of proprietorship. The second text, when the soul is under the spell of material nature and false ego, identifying his body as the self becomes absorbed in material activities. And by the influence of false ego, he thinks that he is the proprietor of everything. So these are, it's part of Sankhya that there's the body and there's the soul and then there's the mind. And then there's the false ego, and without proper identification, full, solid identification with through Sankhya process, following that what's being described here, one gets implicated in material activities, the false sense of proprietorship, and so on. And then transmigration, birth after birth, faulty work, that's not so. The verses are drawing our attention through the whole Sankhya process, and the understanding of material nature is how we are distinct from it. Conceptually, and then in practice, so the practice part is just quickly touched on, and it's going to go further. It's we're a soul, recognizing this is devotional service. We're a soul, we're conditioned, and the consciousness is impure. So that's the package we have to work with. And in that condition, we're attached to material enjoyment. It's very strongly ingrained, as you know, since time immemorial. Deep, deep tendency. So the extrication process is to connect our contaminated consciousness with the Supreme, to direct our consciousness to the Supreme, and following directing our consciousness to the Supreme, tendencies need to be not acted upon, and gradually will be cleansed and gone. I had a nice experience Wednesday. at University of Illinois in Chicago. They've been conducting a program all summer long, even though there's no school, but because it's largely a commuter school. Kids, a number of the undergraduate students could attend. So they did something all summer long. So when the semester began, it was the core group plus the new people that would come. So I attended that little gathering, and one of the persons that came was a new person, his first time. And I asked, what attracted you to come? And he said, well, I saw on the poster that you're teaching Bhakti Yoga, and it's based on Bhagavad Gita, and I thought I'd like to come. I started reading Bhagavad Gita. And he said, well, what is it about Bhagavad Gita that attracts you? He said, well, I'm searching for transcendence. I said, wow, that's pretty nice. And from the reading that you did, what's your general impression? He said, well, Krishna, the Gita's teaching Krishna is God, and he's speaking about how to reach him, and we should follow what he says. I said, okay, well, good. And what part did you find less clear, a little more difficult? He said, well, the whole thing with detached work, being detached from the fruits of your work. I mean, I kind of get it, but I don't exactly get it. And how do you do that?
Yeah. Real fast.
So that's the rub. It's, you know, it's not the theory, it's the application of the theory. And that's what's being said in the purport, which is very long-standing tendency to be attached to fruitive activities with the intention of getting sense gratification. Very, 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 very strong tendency. So even we have this nice theory, and we, you know, it's not merely theory, it's something, it's knowledge. Acting in knowledge. Three times in the purport, Prabhupada repeats the 529 Bhagavad Gita message. Three things. Krishna is the enjoyer. Krishna is the proprietor. Krishna is the friend. Because material consciousness is, I want to be the enjoyer. And for that, I need to become the proprietor. And I'm very benevolent. I'll help other people get sense gratification. We don't know what the real best interest of others are, what to speak of being in the position to give it, commonly. If it's transcendental, we can give Krishna consciousness, but then it's not clear, we're giving people Krishna consciousness. That's the reality, not the delusion. Just bearers of like the postal peon example Prabhupada gives. We're doing something. But we're not the deliverer. So this thing of proprietorship is really big in keeping one engaged in fruitive activities. And the transition between fruitive activities and devotional service is Krishna's the proprietor. It doesn't mean we stop doing things. Karma sannyas, just stop activity. Besides, it's not possible to do that. Just stop activity, as he's saying here. The senses are active, so let's not make the senses inert. Although there are processes that try to do that. After some time, there's activity again. And, you know, the mind is active and the senses are active. One hasn't really relieved oneself from material contamination just by trying to make the senses inactive. Vishwamitra Muni, example. Not possible. The attempt will be a failure. So give the senses proper engagement, or recognize the engagement is for Krishna. It's the principle, the simple. Engagement is for simple. It's for Krishna. And the proprietor of, you know, there's this, looking out the window, this nice tree in the yard, you know, it's Krishna's. And whatever you can see or hear or smell or touch, it's Krishna's. And everything should be, when recognizing Krishna as the proprietor, Krishna is the enjoyer, and Krishna is the well-wisher. That's the peace formula, but it's the bhakti formula too. And rarely does Prabhupada pass up the opportunity of speaking about the extended selfishness of altruism, philanthropy, and doing works for others. what people call selfless work. It's extended selfishness. And he's like really emphatic about it. It's not even so much extended selfishness, it's personal sense enjoyment. That is a fact. So we're driving happiness. The driving impetus for philanthropy is the satisfaction of the philanthropist. I mean, he or she are thinking other people should have something. I have something. Other people should have something. So I'm sharing. And it's good. But as long as the conception remains on the platform of the body, it's binding for the performer. It's not liberating for the performer, and the recipient of that is binding upon the recipient and not liberating for the recipient. So it stays within this material sphere, in other words. How to get out? Even when we try to be detached, compassionate, and you know all other good things, it's still binding. So the connection with the Supreme. So it's really nice. Interacting with our temple brahmacharis, because they ask these kinds of questions about, you know, the gap between what we know, where we're at, and how to close the gap, because the theory is no problem, and then the application that takes, you know, a sincere person to not just, you know, get an A in the exam for knowing someone again, knowing what's what, but then practically applying it. Part of the process of applying it is just hearing it again and again. Why, you know, even in the chapter, the verses are expressing thematically very similar messages. And the purports certainly are expanding in a thematic matter. So someone might go, well, I've already heard that one. What else is there? But hearing it again and again helps. Oh, this, because of repetition, it must be, this is a really important point. That's one of the things. But the message itself is purifying. But bottom line is the application. And without application, the purifying remains theoretical purifying, and then again indulge in activities of sense gratification, and again contamination of consciousness, and we're in the same, not exactly the same place, but not very elevated. Not beyond the affect of material nature. And these subtle energies, false ego, mind, impure intelligence. It's a very effective prison. One cannot escape it. Except to this transcendence. Descending mercy, capturing the descending mercy. Then the phrase, we know this is from the second canto, Tivra Bhakti. Bhakti Yogena Tivrena. You know the verse? Akama Sarvakamova Moksha Kama Udarati Tivrena Bhakti Yogena. You've heard that one. So, whether one has no material desire, one has all material desire, or one wants liberation. Engage in undivided devotional service. So it's easier to think that, well, devotional service is possible for people that aren't like me. Pure devotional service is possible for people that are very elevated. But here it's describing the contaminated consciousness and then specifically saying, well, that contaminated consciousness has to be fully engaged too. With whatever capacity we have to understand this message, limited by our consciousness, we engage in devotional service with proper intention, with proper sincerity, with proper guidance, and then gradually progress.
It seems like a catch-22, Maharaj. Like, you want to train people, you know, to be kind and friendly and compassionate. And they have all these qualities, like I'm thinking about, like, children. You know, you want them to have these qualities, but then in training like that, they're becoming more materially attached.
Well,
in a way, because...
Well, if minus Krishna, yes, but with Krishna, no. Like, somebody that's finishing their graduate studies is now beginning to read Prabhupada's books, and they're understanding, you know, the uselessness of material activity. So the other question is, you know, it's all the energy that people put into, as they have been, you know, encouraged to develop their studies and develop a career and become situated. It's just like it's all useless and just trash it. So, of course, the answer to that is no. That's not what Krishna is advocating. And same with, you know, with what you just said, children, teaching them character. That's a fundamental part of knowledge. Being compassionate and being tolerant and is part of the Lord of goodness. From that position, then, you know, do those compassionate things for Krishna. That's the transcendence that this young man said he's looking for, but doesn't know exactly what it is. The language of Rupa Goswami is, Prabhupada translates it, a type of cultivation. Anushilana. Anyabhilasha tushunyam jnanakarmajanavratam anukulyena anushilana bhaktirutama. Anu means follow and shilana means conduct. So we are following the example of the liberated souls or great souls, cultivating that on the strength of their good example and their teachings. So we're down here, they're up there, we're following, cultivating. So it's the parents that are teaching the children character, or be good, don't hurt other kids, whatever level the seventh child is that. It's the incumbent upon the parent or the person teaching, training, is the do it for Krishna part. Krishna's satisfaction is the objective. Now that's not easy to a child or to any, you know, adult, but that's what Prabhupada is presenting here in the purport specifically, and this whole section. Cultivation of bhakti.
And in obeying your parents, you are pleasing Krishna. Krishna wants you to obey your parents.
What if your parents say
the wrong thing? Go steal this for me?
Or they say, one of them told me, you know, just promise me you won't go to the Hare Krishna temple. You can be, you know, a religious person, that's okay. We're religious people. You can be a religious person, but
not too much.
Just don't go overboard.
Well, and even specifically, you know, not even like, they don't want their child to get involved at all. Because, you know, two becauses. One is a bad experience with somebody, and then another is, well, you know, we're the many gods people and they're the one god people, and so our views don't match, so don't go there. Promise me you won't go there. Yeah.
Now that the subject has come up, can I ask a question? Related to this?
Yeah.
I've been in a lot of anxiety for a long time about how to relate to my parents nicely. And I don't know, I haven't been able to figure out what would be pleasing to Krishna, because my parents are not very favorable to Krishna consciousness.
Yeah.
And so...
Welcome to the club.
Yeah. It's really hard for me to spend time around them, because all they talk about is just mundane things. And
welcome to the club.
You know, and they hunt and they fish, and I can't eat anything with them, so I'm always bringing my own food, and that makes them kind of upset. I don't know if I'm being lazy because I'm not making more of an effort just to try to connect with them, or just be loving, or if I'm being proper and just kind of, I don't really call them a lot or spend a lot of time with them, because it's just really hard for me.
I'm in the same boat. I don't lament about it. I'll give my response. The most important gift did you receive that thing I sent out about Prime Minister Modi gave the Emperor of Japan a Bhagavad Gita? Did you receive that? Mm-hmm. Did you receive that?
I don't know if I read it. Well, how long
just yesterday. Yesterday,
oh,
day before.
I just probably haven't read all night.
Okay. Well, and he said, you know, that he was challenging his secular friends. Like, you know, leaders aren't supposed to do that because you're a secular government. He said, there's no better gift to give than Bhagavad Gita. So, your parents, you know, there's no better gift to give than devotion to Krishna, but they don't want it. So, there's another way you can give it without, you know, without they're, you know, giving them a Bhagavad Gita class, or, you know, explaining things, or things that they're just, like, get disturbed about, etc., is this being the example of, in your life, when you're not with them, and whenever it is that you're with them, just if you develop, to the degree that you develop pure devotion, they will automatically benefit spiritually. That's the principle that I have confidence in. And with my family members, that, you know, same. That they eat this and talk that, and what's important to them. Like, yeah, I, anyway, my older brother. We have conversations from time to time, and one of his recent conversations was, you know, you should place more value in family. And I said, I have family, but the spiritual family. And, you know, you're my brother. And I didn't get into, you know, who were you in the previous lifetime and where will you be in the next lifetime? I didn't get into the philosophy. I just said, my value is centered. I didn't even get into that. So I just said, we have a different set of values, and I respect you have your values. Please respect I have my values. And I'm your younger brother. And you're my older brother. I respect you as my older brother. We just have a different set of values. Please allow me to have a different set of values. Mm. Oh, yeah. But at least you should do this. And, you know, so in one sense, you know, I'm a hopeless case for them. I'm not going to do what they want me to do. On the other sense, they have great appreciation for the dedication, for the character, the qualities, you know, that which comes with the package of devotion to Krishna. And supposing they didn't have that respect, I couldn't do it differently anyways. But I've made effort to try to be, you know, a good brother. My parents are at this time gone, but when they were around, you know, this, not good at, my mother said, you're not good at letter writing anyways, and it's out of my dad. Anyway, the most important gift is the gift of bhakti. So grow your bhakti, and if they can't, you can be like a good daughter or a good sister or a good, yes, you know, be good in all the ways that people look at being good as being good. You do that as much as you can. But I at least, you know, they may speak differently about this, but how many times you visit and while you're there feeling really uncomfortable and they're eating this and talking that, and I'd rather just be like, for me, I'd rather be the, from time to time we get together, and, you know, it's not extended, because it's just, I am a sannyasi, I'm not, you know, in a woman's body, but they know who I am, they accept who I am, they're proud of me for who I am, and I'm happy. I'm, from their point of view, productive. You know, they only see in terms of like titles and things like that. But, you know, I do stuff. They know I'm very busy, not lazy. Anyway, so they respect that. The material part of my life of devotion, like my sister said, you going to retire? Come visit us in Florida. We, said I retired when I was 20. This is my retired life. Just, you know, a little different lifestyle. And if the acceptance, to the degree that there can be acceptance, is not necessarily I accept, I'm going to chant japa too, or I'm going to offer my food to Krishna too, or, you know, like, you know, not that kind of acceptance. But acceptance that this is making you a happier person, you're balanced, and you do things that a nice daughter would do, you go out of your way to help, and like that. You know, not cosmetically, but genuinely. Do those things that will help them appreciate that Krishna is in your life, and that as service to Krishna. And then, you know, the other things, what can you do? You tolerate it. And just put your attention on what can I do that's going to help them feel positive, to whatever degree they can feel positive about Krishna's in my life. Krishna's at the center of my life. So, whatever that is, first in service to Krishna, you try to do that. The wearing you down part is from your side, is, you know, the attachment on the bodily platform, as opposed to, you know, here are spirit souls because of strong identification with the body, they think of me as their family member. Okay, so out of all the people that are spirit souls, this is an opportunity that I have with my family members to serve them, because they identify more strongly with me than all the other circle of relatives, than all the other living beings. So this is an opportunity for service to Krishna. How can I have them think favorably towards Krishna? They're not going to read Bhagavad Gita, not going to chant japa. So what is it? I've had, you know, different probably than what you described, what your parents are not approving. My family members are just curious. It's like, you know, what's the weather and who won the football game, and, you know, tell me a little bit about Krishna consciousness, and what did Uncle Roy do? And it's like just part of the information stream. Not really, you know, curiosity, and not really like they want to know. So I don't see that as being especially beneficial, as, you know, like wait for those moments when they'll ask something. I believe that they've read just to make sure that what I'm up to is, you know, not bad. But just, it's information, it's not anything more than that. So more compelling is character and qualities. That's compelling. And however you can do that, you know, modestly. That's great.
And especially with this death of Sadie in our family, I feel like there's a reason we're all together with this, and that there's a reason that I'm with them too, to help them a little bit, you know, like that. So I don't know if that's right thinking or not, but I really felt like family was important, especially going through a tragedy. So I'm glad, even though my family, they're not into Krishna consciousness, they're thinking about, you know, spiritual matters in their own way, and they're real respectful of us about our diet, and, you know, they're not so curious with this. Of course, whenever something like this happens, people become more
spiritual.
More spiritual, you know.
With more thoughtful of God.
An opportunity that way. And, you know, they have a Gita, and they're looking at the Gita a little bit. I read some Gita at the service. And, you know, but I'm also, you know, I'm just on this little platform of being just attached materially to all these things, too. I mean, I'm really like that, so. And I don't really see that I'm going to change greatly that much. Just how I am. Then I understand what you're saying about this transcendent thing, but I don't feel like I'm going to be able to go there at least in this lifetime. And even thinking about Krishna all the time, I mean, I'm attached to some of all these activities, or helping people, or being a friend.
Well,
like that.
Learn, learn the art of doing those in such a way. Mindfully, in such a way that Krishna will be pleased. That's the bhakti element besides I like. That's the art of devotion, is that it's not that Krishna doesn't like when people are compassionate to others. I don't like that. That's not it. It's the consciousness behind the activity that's attractive. That's what Krishna wants from us. Not just be compassionate as opposed to the other types of things. Do what you do for Him. Do that for Him. And thus, He is the friend and you're the instrument. Doesn't mean I don't have friendships now. But Krishna's in the picture. There's this presentation that I have. Actually, it's Shivram Maharaj created it. I just embellished it. But it's explaining Rupa Goswami's message of rasa. But so how can there be loving relationships between two people? And the short of it is, when you can see who they are on the spiritual platform. Because if you don't see who they are, then it's dysfunctional. Try to have a relationship with someone where you have a different idea of who they are than who they are, and vice versa. So take it to the spiritual platform, and then, okay, that seems like that's it, but that's the picture isn't complete yet because God's in the picture. That which brings two people together is that which connects the two people. Is there? They both have. We're both from Krishna. Anyway, that's the transcendental picture of, in response to what you said. I'm attached to these things, and I find happiness in these things, and I like these things. All that, it's not like stop doing those things. It's go the step, the extra step of contemplating how Krishna's happiness is being accomplished by this. And that's how you keep Krishna thought in the midst of all those things when you're with your family members and so on and so on. I mean, you said it. There's some service that I have to do for them. That's the service. You're carrying bhakti. Your personality is affable. So it's easy for people that aren't devotees to be with you because you're accommodating and affable and warm and happy person. And that's nice. Now there's some transcendental service. And because you're a devotee at heart, that service is being accomplished. Now all that's the extra step is, I'm Krishna's little messenger here. I'm his instrument. I'm his emissary. in this situation and that situation. And it may not be so clear exactly how to be the emissary, but if one thinks of oneself as the emissary or the instrument, then opportunities, I've seen it, opportunities start to, oh, there's an opportunity, there's an opportunity. Besides just being Krishna's instrument because you're carrying bhakti. It's, here's how I can give bhakti. As by thinking oneself as the instrument. Doors will open, or opportunities will present themselves when one is thinking that way. It's like the biblical seek and you shall find message. If we're not seeking, we're not going to find. So if you're seeking for Krishna, please use me as your instrument in this situation. And you know, like this example I was sharing here is that then think nice thought about Krishna. It's really good that Krishna's in your life. You'll become a better person. A better sister or a better friend or a better... But you know, Krishna's inside and Krishna, you're wearing your devotion to Krishna. You're not pushing it on people, just it's like the diet. They're honoring you that you have these preferences, and consciousness-wise, it's for pleasing Krishna from your position. And they probably know this already, but what's driving everything is you're deciding so many things, how you live, because it's pleasing to Krishna. To that degree that they think of Krishna as at the center of your life, that's going to be their permanent spiritual asset that they wouldn't have if you weren't their family member, friend, or relative.